Bandwidth for the Weird Things podcast provided by WiredTree. For sites of any size and world-class customer service, head on over to WiredTree.com.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to After Things. I am Andrew Main, of course, as always, here in Austin, Texas, joined with Brian Brushwood.
Oh, I was hoping would do the bit.
Brian Brushwood. Whoa, great reps today at the gym for me. I set a couple PRs. I logged
this
all my.
All right, this is exactly what happened when Brian walked in the studio
before we went live. I said I'm going to say this before we go live, just so I can say it without everybody making a thing out of it.
A thing that happened only today.
I did have a PR day.
Yeah, and Justin Robert Young.
I'm doing a Rush Limbaugh impression. I'm Justin Robert Young. I have a vocoder, and I like to say "see you later."
I always just love that our impressions always act like they've just been awoken. Like, whoa, I'm Bob. Look at me, yo.
So I have a question for After Things today, and hopefully you guys can help me out with this. I'm working on a new project that I hope to talk in specific detail more about soon, but I think I'm having two sort of roadblocks in it right now, which is just general motivation, trying to like find the energy to say, oh, instead of like watching TV or something, I'm going to start working on this thing.
Right.
B, trying to navigate a few media that I don't do a lot of. So a part of it is writing. There's some writing and planning stuff that goes into it. But there will also be a podcast element. There's some sort of serialized element alongside music stuff. And so it's kind of a lot of different things some of which I do and am more comfortable with, and some stuff that I've done occasionally or stuff that I've never published. And so I guess if you guys had any advice on handling either of those things.
I'll tell you what, and I know this started off as a joke, but let's talk about my workout schedule. Basically
weird how it got there. It's just so weird.
I know
it's out of the blue.
I know that I don't seem to have any trouble. Yeah, there's those moments you want to step outside, and I think of life as two versions. You have the first-person shooter where you're running around in the trenches doing stuff, but then also you take the 1,000-foot view. You're playing life as a real-time strategy game, right? Mm-hmm. And then you could ask yourself questions like, well, it seems like, in general, this Brian that I'm looking at will left to his own devices. He doesn't seem to have any trouble going to the gym or working out, but he does like to do the easy things like, get on the exercise bike so he can play Hearthstone while he's doing it. Mm-hmm. And so as the real-time strategy guy, I'm going to spend money, because that's a resource in the video game of life, and I'm going to put him with a trainer who's going to force him to do the things he's not very good at, right? Uh-huh. Or is not naturally attracted to. So likewise, if you have a project and you know that's part of it, not that the answer is spend money to get somebody to look over your shoulder,
sure.
but it can be build structures that naturally will hold you accountable for progress. And whether that structure is, for example, when you're dieting, logging helps out tremendously, or if you have a calendar and you put a check mark on every single day, yes, I did do my push-ups or whatever.
Yeah.
You could do the same thing on that. Like what I will often do is set the criteria, make it very, very flexible. For example, when I'm hungry, I know all I want to do is make some macaroni and cheese or some garbage food, but I'll say, Brian, I'm talking to you, myself, mm-hmm. You could have literally anything you want. You could eat as bad as you want after you have these carrots. And then, of course, what happens is, you get through the carrots, and you're like, yeah, I'm not very hungry, and you end up doing the right thing. Mm-hmm. So likewise, if you're bumping up against not making progress on your project because there's aspects that don't come naturally to you, set up a reward for yourself on the other side of that project where mm-hmm. it's like you could, oh, I want to watch TV. Well, Bryce, you can watch any amount of TV for any amount of time after you write one page or whatever it is.
Sure. Okay.
Yeah, I would actually kind of take a slightly different tact and say that a lot of times roadblocks are not necessarily a lack of motivation, but rather a diffusing that happens because you don't understand the problem enough. And so you are creating natural doubt in your head that is dampening your drive to do it. Mm-hmm. And, you know, for example, if, you know, part of what you are doing is you know, you're fretting about like, I'm working in a medium that I don't really know, then like make the thing that you're doing that day, like just research on the thing. Right. Or just if it's writing, it's like, I'm just doing outlining. I'm literally just going to like do a garbage outline of exactly what I want to do. I'm going to put it into steps because when we contextualize better, you know, I always kind of I come back to this like pattern recognizing thing. Like I think we hesitate when we don't know what this pattern is or this pattern is unknowable. The more it comes into focus, the more you're actually putting your motivation into it. You know, and I think that sometimes can be a dangerous thing is thinking that like, oh, I'm lazy, like I'm an unmotivated person because I haven't gotten this done. And sometimes that's the case. But in general, if you've created stuff before and you've already kind of felt that adrenaline of like what it is to like put in effort, release something and have people kind of understand it, if you're already on that journey, then 9 times out of 10, for me at least, it's more just simplifying the problem and not being afraid to say, well, like, oh, man, I got these 90 steps that I have to do. Instead, just being like, no, let me overindulge one tiny little organizational thing, because for me that's what I have a horrifying problem with, is breaking down the like, okay, if I want to have this done by 2 months from now, I need to do these 11 steps. Mm-hmm. I'm really bad at like just writing off yada yada yadaing in my head 10 of those steps, overindulging on the 3 that I'm really good at, and then getting to the day that it's supposed to be done and being like, oh crap, let me totally burn through all these other things. And so I'll get it done, but it'll be bad and it'll be like not as good. The stuff that I really care about will not be very well served because I didn't take my time on these other things that, like, even if I just would have contextualized, let me just learn, let me literally just spend a day like doing a dumb Photoshop for Fanmade, sure. You know, just so I can just be better at and competent at this tool that I am really bad at, instead of just saying, oh, okay.
I think that's a really good point, is reducing the barrier of success. Because oftentimes we have, like, let's say you want to write, like, I don't want to just write a page. I want to write a really good page.
Sure.
And so you set that as your goal and you're like, well, I don't think that's in me right now. So I'm not going to write anything because, you know, I don't want to do it. So, but if you lower that barrier, this is one of Dan Harmon's tricks, is he says there's no such thing as writer's block. If you're not feeling it, you are physically capable of writing. Just give yourself permission to make it abject garbage. Like, just you are consciously on purpose writing total trash that will never see the light of day. The mere act of doing it, you cross a threshold, and now you're in that different headspace, and it's astonishing how quickly it ends up becoming good. Likewise, Tony Robbins talked about a client that he was trying to motivate to, we'll say, go for a mile-long walk every single day. And week after week after week, she was like, no, I didn't do it. And he said, okay, new rule. You don't have to – I'm no longer saying you have to go for a walk. The one thing, and hopefully we could agree on this, is you will put on your walking clothes and put on those shoes. She's like, okay, fine. Yes. And they're like, that's all you have to do. We'll call that success. Next time he saw her, she said, yeah, I know. I felt dumb. I put on the clothes and I put on the shoes. And he's like, great. Now you could start walking. And then she cuts him off saying like, I walked 3 miles. Like once you got that threshold, once you started any part of the journey, it naturally was self-fulfilling at that point.
So there's another element to this, and this is not, excusing, because I think that's all really good information. One part of this is that there is a performance element, or there's like a hosting sort of thing. And that's the sort of thing where I could probably, I could, that's something that I could practice doing to myself, but at some point I have to sort of bite the bullet and do, you know, a live test or a real thing with other people to do the thing.
So similarly, figure out a version of it with much lower stakes. For example, when I'm, there's no way to practice magic without another person. You could practice the moves, but the storytelling, the ability to read somebody's personality, figure out where you're connecting and where you're not, you need another person. And so for me, I mean, it was like, you know, my mom was real patient. She watched the same damn routine a million times, and I knew none of this was applicable. It wasn't really fooling her, but having another person made it easier. So if this is something, for example, podcasting or whatever,
sure,
just pick up the phone, call a friend, and think to yourself, I'm going to do a 5-minute podcast for this friend. This friend will enjoy talking to me, and I'll tell them in advance, like, you know, hey, Nate Staniforth, it's me. I'm going to practice podcasting. So starting now, I'm going to go 5 minutes of talking to myself like I'm Rush Limbaugh and go. And then having that immediate feedback really helps, and having a low stakes version of it, it's you are building the structures and the subroutines that you will organically start running when you're doing the actual thing.
Okay.
I mean, look, I'm literally doing that right now. Like, I'm working on this politics thing, and I've like talked to friends, good friends, and like I literally am just doing in my head. I'm like, what do they find interesting? What don't they find interesting? What questions are they asking? And I'm building in my own, this is because it's going to be a departure from stuff that I've done before. Like, I'm a lot more scripted, and I can't rely on the one thing that I know I'm good at in single mics up, which is talking, reading the room, creating fun little moments based on things that people are saying, and like making it feel alive and exciting. If I'm just recording a thing without a live audience and then like putting it out, it's a whole different, you know, a ball of wax basically. And like,
in Arnold Schwarzenegger's book, Total Recall, he thinks about it through the lens of reps, and it, you know, he got started in bodybuilding, right? And he was like, oh, the difference between where I am now and being Mr. Universe is just reps. So get started and make it automatic. Make it part of your story. My job is to play a psychopathic killer robot who knows everything about guns. Well, then I just need to do enough reps of breaking down and reassembling an automatic weapon to where I can credibly look like I know what I'm doing. Same thing with politics. You know, it's like, I'm going to meet people day in, day out, every day. My job is to make it comfortable for them and get what I want, just reps. And so he's constantly testing himself, putting himself in a situation with the intention of unlocking new skill sets, because we all have material that we use socially and things that we're already good at. Pretty much everything you're already good at because you did it a lot. Mm-hmm. And so the real question is not how to get good at a thing,
but how to do something a lot.
How to find a way to do it a lot, right?
Okay. Interesting. I think that's all really helpful. It's something.
So what are you doing?
Which, by the way, for me, in the magic world, that's why I was so attracted to street performing, because I could I had unlimited at bats. The worst thing that could happen is people would say you suck and walk off. Yeah. And if I did well, I'd have beer money for the rest of the week. Yeah. And so, getting that similar to. As you've heard me say before, find a safe space to be bad so that you can become good, because the one definitely leads to the other.
Yeah. Justin was asking what it is. I have been looking for a new music.
It's a pickaxe, isn't it?
That's right. I'm making the world's first musical pickaxe. I call it the axe, the electric axe. I had been looking for a new musical project for a long time, and the last two album projects that I had done were very story centric. They were built around the first one was around a short story that I wrote, and the second one was around the movie DOA. And I've been wanting to get back into making more music, because that also has kind of gotten out of my regular sort of thing. And I thought that the best way to do that would be to find a story that I could work collaboratively with people. And the solution, or at least the goal, is to create a D&D campaign that we could be recorded as a real play podcast, like a D&D podcast that I DM, and we have other people to explore the world. And
well, where will you get any kind of experience doing any kind of role-playing adventure? It's not like you've got talented improvisers with comedy albums that hit number one on Billboard at your beck and call that you deal with week after week.
Sure.
I know.
But it's a different thing to be, because I've been in D&D groups before, and being a player character in D&D is, depending on how in character you want to be, can be pretty easy, relative to being a game master, where you have to take all of the things into consideration people. Yeah,
I would imagine it's a different skill set, because when you're playing as a player, you get to do whatever you want or whatever you think your character wants. Whereas you as a game master have to go through, I would imagine, the agonizing experience of having made beautifully crafted presence that characters just walk right past. Like, you put so much time, energy, and effort for them to walk into this door and discover the surprise party you've planned for them. Yeah. And then they just walk right past it. You're like, I guess that's not happening.
I think of I'm in a Pathfinder group right now, and we had a one woman who sort of was separated from the group, and she kept coming back and intersecting with us in these very obtuse ways to where she was clearly trying to get us to go to another city, but for some reason she couldn't just say, go meet me at this city. And so she had to pretend to be some old woman and say her family needed help because there's a demon. And we go, well, we can't help you. We're looking for our friend. And so, And I think that's the sort of thing where, that character had information that they knew they couldn't directly say, but the GM also can't say, well, it seems like this person can't really tell you what they want.
Right.
You know, and a million other little things. But it's a very different thing from the things that I do now. But it's something that I'm really interested in. And so I think all of that advice is really good. And
just break it down.
Yeah.
Break it down, and if you're like, okay, I still don't, I'm not getting tread on this idea, I'm not progressing with this idea, break that down further. Like, literally.
What's a piece of this idea that I could do today? That's what really has worked well for me, is you start with your goals, and you break them down into bite-sized chunk, and then you know you're finished when you end up with, and you don't have to do this for every single thing, but when you continue to break stuff down, you end up with something you could do right this minute that will get you measurably closer to that forever someday goal.
Yeah. So, it's something that I would like to have out sometime this year, because it would be something that would really state a lot of things that I have wanted to do for a while, both have a podcast project, have a more edited podcast experience, making music for it.
Yeah. What I like hearing about this too, is that you're using stuff that your day job you are training full time for this in many ways.
Yeah. And so, I'm excited for it. It's just, part of the writing element is that there's a lot of world building, because I'm not taking another existing campaign or an existing world. And so that's where some of it, where you can make progress, but it's maybe not always measurable, because it's like, oh, I'm just writing down lore or history and stuff. And so I'm excited to share stuff about that in the future. Man,
how great! The spoiler: my pick is going to be Deadwood, because I just finished the first season finale last night. How great would David Milch be as a dungeon master? Like, since apparently that's literally how he wrote the scripts for Deadwood, is showing up high as a kite and just rattling off dialogue that Ian McShane had to immediately turn around and say on camera.
Apparently, that was more NYPD Blue. Toward the latter seasons of NYPD Blue, he was like, there was apparently some gigantic monologue that Dennis Franz had that won him an Emmy, and it was literally just David Milch just being like, this, go. And he would shoot him and then be like, okay. And then this. And he would just be making it up on the fly. But the Deadwood scripts, he would write literally dictation style in the writer's room. And he would just come up with them sort of like off the top of his head and then have other people writing it like on a projection. And then periodically other people would like chime in with other ideas or clarifications or questions. But one of the most fascinating auteurs of our time, David Milch. Although I haven't seen Luck. Luck is the only David Milch show that I really haven't watched a lot of. Hmm.
If we're doing picks, Justin, do you have a pick?
I think, well, Justin just gave his, but me, Brian Brushwood, I'm going to pick physical fitness. No, I don't know. I don't know if I really have. Deadwood is also mine.
Okay,
Deadwood's so good.
I have a pick. I'm going to talk about it a little bit more on Cord Killers, but another new Netflix show that just premiered is Nailed It.
Oh no, I don't know.
You don't
one.
Know this? Okay, so this is more Netflix getting into basic cable stuff, and I love it.
Really?
It is a cooking reality show or a cooking reality competition show, like Chopped or Iron.
Is this
Top
riffing
Chef?
On the Pinterest meme of people trying to do stuff and it comes
people
out
trying to replicate
bad?
Cakes. Yes.
Oh, this is great.
And what's great is it's a concept that could be really mean. Right.
Yeah.
Because you intentionally you're taking people who have self-admittedly do not have any skills cooking.
I mean, to be honest, you're describing the plot of Modern Rogue. I mean, that's what we do. Sure. Is we make shabby potato cannons and then say nailed it.
But when you compare it to other cooking shows, you know, you compare it to Top Chef. This is the same company that made Top Chef.
Right.
And Top Chef is, you know, some of the best chefs around the world and their failures are on very slight mistakes but these are people who have very limited baking knowledge, making desserts, who are being given the recipes. Like they have a big tablet on their screen with exactly how to make the thing that they're making. And the tone, but what's great is that the tone is very loose. It's completely different than a Project Runway or a Top Chef.
It's so interesting to me, this, I guess it's a universal theme over the last 20 years, this movement away from perfection that we've gotten. We've realized that our podcasts, we don't mind when hosts, you know, mix up their words or have to restart or what have you. You don't need to have a perfect radio voice.
Yeah.
I don't know. I adore this trend of us seeing everybody for the flawed humans that we are.
Well, and what's great about this is that it's very jovial, right? Like, everyone knows that what they're going to make is not going to look like these masterpieces that they're trying to
But
replicate.
They're all having a good time, and they're genuinely happy when they get close.
Right. You know?
And that's, you know, it's funny because that's kind of a lot of where the territory that we've mined on Night Attack and stuff like that is that, you know, we know we're not going to win, but you're kind of in a win-win situation if, you know, if you fail, ha ha ha, we knew that we were going to fail. At least we did it with style. Mm-hmm. And if we happen to get close, it's like, whoa, what an amazing miracle. Like, isn't everything possible in this wild world? Like, but I think what's interesting about that and where I'm excited to watch it eventually is just the idea that reality television, and competition shows, which have a very specific DNA, can have the freedom now to sort of explore itself as an art form, where before it was just kind of like, no, this is, look, we need something that we can turn around 50 episodes of theoretically in four different branding variations of, like, you know, Top Chef is Chopped and it's every other, like, you know, a competition thing that you put little twists on, but ultimately they all look and feel the same. And that's reality television. This is reality television as an exploration. It's not just the quickest way between two spots. It's also now tropes that we can subvert and do different things with.
Well, it's also fascinating, right? Because you look at a Top Chef or Chopped, and this is very similar structurally to Chopped, in that because there's no commercial breaks, there's no need to have these act break tensions.
And nowadays, even if you're watching a show with the commercials cut out, it is distracting and annoying. It's like, that's 30 seconds of wasted bandwidth.
Yeah.
You did setting up a thing and then recapping the thing after the break. I'm with you. I like that story-wise, you're able to tell tighter, more direct stories.
But also, they're longer. These are about 31 minutes compared to 22 minutes for cable. So you actually get more time with it. And the other fascinating thing is that it is on paper all of the best things about these reality competition shows, right? The failures and the shocking moments, but without any of the emotional baggage, right? Like if they make a cake that is lopsided, it's not, oh no, the end of the world, I'm out of this show. It's hey, check it out. Here's one of my many foibles.
Right.
And there's something brilliant about it. I would say if you do watch it, and there's only 6 episodes, which is the other weird thing. If you watch it, I would say watch the first 2 because the first episode feels like they're getting in the groove of it before they finally kind of get it with the second one. Also, feels very cheap for the company that works on Project Runway and Top Chef.
I mean, maybe that's, you know, you look at it on paper, sure. It's a highly speculative risk. It's like, well, let's budget very little money and allow people to go crazy.
Yeah.
Spoiler alert. Many times in reality television, the question is not, can we get money? The question is, can we get enough money for this to work?
Yes.
And another one of the cruel japes of pitching reality television is that very often it's like, okay, well, congratulations. All the suits say you're the best and that everyone ever before was the worst. And we are totally in for the you business. So our offer is $7 an episode. we may or may not air it.
Yeah.
So now, because we believe in you, you can either disappoint us and walk away, or you can do this for -$7.
Oh,
sorry.
No.
Markets fluctuate, you know.
Yeah, you know, it's...
Would you enjoy being paid in exposure?
Yeah.
And I wonder... I wonder how much of that is also the fact that it doesn't have commercial breaks, right? If you're airing something on TV, you can expect that there will be ad breaks and there will be some revenue, where for Netflix, especially now where it's constantly putting out tons of new shows.
Yeah. I think that's more it, is that they have X amount of budget pie and they have an ever expanding idea of what they want to do. And so now if you're looking to hit X titles, then congratulations. The new thing for Netflix, a place where we know premier awesome talent comes and does stuff, is
short.
Who's got an idea they can do for $20,000?
Yeah.
We'll give you 6 episodes for $20,000 an episode, which is like people won't get out of bed for. But if you already got the studio and you already got people, like,
well,
that
I have this story about a guy who blogs from his closet and then discovers, you know, this website. It's like, yeah, you know what? Maybe we can do that for $20,000 an episode.
Are you pitching Guy Carly?
And I think a company like the Chop People, like, look, this is something that they probably banged out in a weekend. Like that's 2 days of work. So everybody can kind of get paid,
and
come in, shoot it, and that'll be it.
You know, they can afford to do that because with Netflix, you get unprecedented metrics on the inside. They don't release anything on the outside, but on the inside, you can know the age and you can know the drop-off points and what is engaging. Like, this weaponizing of people's attention and the buttons that can be pressed that, you know, because I assume Netflix's goal is the same as YouTube's goal, which is press play, get started, stay in our trap as long as you can, and not be looking at other stuff.
With Nailed It, feels like this like wave. I mentioned earlier like the basic cabling of Netflix, but you know, we just recently had Queer Eye come out, which I think is a great show, also very short season. We talked on Cord Killers a week or two ago that they're getting their first home renovation show on Netflix, and maybe this is all testing the market to see what people do and don't want more of, because they do seem like cheaper shows that they could make a lot more of relatively quickly, you know? So
can I ask a dumb question?
Okay.
Are all the guys on the Queer Eye show, they're not the guys from the old Queer Eye show, or are they?
No, they're all new guys.
New guys?
Yeah. All new guys.
So what happened to those guys?
I think most of them went on to do not much. I think one of
they
I
all
think,
went straight. They're all straight now.
Big shock.
Actually, I'll tell you what, Hollywood, it's faker the closer you get to it.
Though I think one of those Queer Eye guys is the host of Chopped.
Oh, no kidding.
I think he was. But yeah, I don't know how much
now they're all, now they all host the Fox NFL pregame show.
Oh Jesus!
They're spokesman for Home Depot. I don't know. Now we're just getting into.
I didn't realize that was just a full reboot. And they were just like taking that idea, and then like I saw.
Well, a clip. So if all of the players are in there, like who owns the? Is it the same production company that did the original?
I would assume.
I would think so. I think so. It's still got the same created by.
Well, because like you know, oftentimes the names of projects will be coy. Like when HBO did it and paid for it and owns all the rights, it was Mr. Show with Bob and David, right? But Bob and David, I assume HBO is not getting checks from the new project with Bob and David
on Netflix. Yeah.
But that makes sense because you're following talent from point A to point B. Sure. But what is the connective thread between Queer Eye and Queer Eye for the Straight Guy?
I really don't know, because also Queer Eye was, for all intents and purposes, a Bravo project. It was Bravo's first big thing.
Hey, do you think Bravo's collecting royalties on that? Or
maybe, but also...
No. Because look, I mean, like they just rebooted American Idol like at ABC. You know, like you can
buy the rights to stuff.
The production company, Fremantle Media took their show
because they owned it. On a different network. I guess that's what I'm wondering.
Not going to sell a box set of all of them unless everybody makes a deal so you can get one box set of the. Although I guess I don't know if Netflix is going to sell a box set of anything. But,
yeah, it's weird. I would love to know all that stuff, but you never know how much that stuff bubbles up necessarily. But it's fascinating. I think, you know, Netflix doing the stuff of going for not big budget, not prestige dramas and political thrillers
Getting that trash.
I said this on Twitter the other day. I think in the next 12 months, Netflix announces a reality doc show, like a Real Housewives type show.
Yeah. I believe it. Why not?
They've already got Terrace House, which is just an import. Why don't they just do it in America? Do an America one. Do something.
So apparently, Scout Productions is the through line. They were the production company with the Bravo show, and they are contracting with Netflix to reboot with a new Fab Five.
Great, and it's a good cast of guys on this new Queer Eye. Good guys.
The clip I watched was they did one with like a Netflix engineer.
They did like a 6 minute like digital clip on their YouTube with one of the guys from the Netflix engineering team, and it was like the exact show. It was just on YouTube.
And it was the only thing that I thought was funny was Felicia Day today was like questioning the actual chef skills of the chef guy.
Okay, I saw that.
He apparently has poor knife discipline.
Oh, well, I can't say anything to that. But you know, he's teaching guys who don't know anything, who don't know how to cook anything. It's really simple stuff. And I think, you know, it's not like the guy who every week gets to redo, you know, this person's entire home.
Well, you know, also,
you got to teach them something they can use.
They're doing a television show. Yeah. So if the best chef in the world doesn't fit with the television aesthetic, of the chemistry with everybody and the look of everything, like that's how those decisions are actually made. It's not like the onus of us television is on finding exactly the experts for these reality shows. It's like, no, can you hum enough that you can read expert and then, you know, also be somebody that you want to spend time with on television. That's the operative phrase there.
One last through line between these two shows, between Queer Eye and Nailed It, is that they're both kind of educational. Like, I think if you watched Chopped, you might pick up some, like, you could pick up some cooking stuff of like, oh yeah, if I'm making venison, I do kind of do this. But it's like, well, on Nailed It, they're like, no, this is the recipe. Here's footage of us doing the right thing, you know. You feel like you're actually taking something away from it in a material sense.
It sounds awful modern roguish, to be honest.
Okay, mister.
Oh, no. I'm not accusing them of ripping off our format, but what I'm doing is I'm taking joy in the fact that we apparently are hitting on the same idea that has worked well for Nailed It.
Yeah. So there you go. Any last things for after things, you guys?
No, Andrew. just too bad Bryce died.
I did.
Yeah, Bryce is dead. But guess what? I'm gonna set a PR curling his corpse.
That implies that you've already got a record.
Well, as you know, me, just Robert Young, I don't play any video games, so I guess I'll just play PlayerUnknown's Battlegrounds and Hearthstone and with my Switch. Some Breath of the Wild is so great.
Oh my God. By the way, I forgot my Switch on that trip to Austin. It was agony. It was awful. Planes are made for Switches.
Luckily, you don't play video games, so it's not a problem.
No, I'm Brian Brushwood.
No, Brian Brushwood plays a lot of video games. Brian Brushwood loves his Switch.
Game Meister. You know, the only thing I like better than a good video game is working out. I love it.
All right, until we talk to you guys next week, it's been After.
The Diamond Club hopes you have enjoyed this program.